What is up, Knoll Nation? It is the guys from Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. And we are back with you to talk about some Florida State football. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. We got a couple of different topics I want to cover today, Michael. We're going to, of course, we've got a couple of little updates I want to share with you guys as we start to get into things. Then we're going to talk about a little bit of the roster move so far. Who's gone into the portal, kind of who some guys Florida State might be looking at, and things like that. And then I want to also have a conversation at the end. Obviously, we know what's happened with, you know, the playoffs. That's been really the talk of the last week. And to be honest, guys, I'm sorry I haven't got an episode out sooner, but your boy is tired from trying to keep up with my mentions on social media. I've been putting out a lot of long threads about why I feel like Florida State should have been in the playoffs, could have competed in the playoffs. Yeah. I encourage you to go read those. They're really long, really a lot of research went into those. But that's going to be kind of the premise of what we're going to finish the show out on today. Yeah. It's just talking about some of these threads that I put out about why we feel like Florida State could have competed in the playoffs. Of course, we know they won't get that chance, and the Orange Bowl is not going to be the same situation, so Correct. It's not going to be fair to judge that off of that. But that's what we're going to talk about today, so excited to get into it, guys. Michael, thank you for joining me. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right, man. Just like you, just trying to figure out how to process all my emotions and thoughts about the snub and the screw job, as I'm calling it. And I seen the t-shirts out there, you know, says robbed, and
You can't beat us, cheat us. And
that's right. That's right. Yeah. Trying to figure out if I'm going to, you know, because I'm in Orlando and the game's down in Miami. So I've been trying to figure out if I'm going to go. I'm kind of waiting to see who opts out, who stays in. And that'll kind of help me determine if I'm going to spend the money to go down to that game. But I'm excited for this offseason. Look, yeah, we got screwed. You know, ESPN sucks. You know, all like that stuff. But this is. Yeah, I have great faith in Mike Norvell. They're already out building for next year, getting ready. So I'm excited for what's going to come. But yeah, let's process some of this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to touch on that real quick too, what you said about the offseason. I mean, so far, really, I've only seen Johnny Wilson opt out of the bowl game, and that is the first little bit of news that I want to talk about. Obviously, we just mentioned it, Johnny Wilson has declared for the 2024 NFL draft. He has opted out of the Orange Bowl. So, you know, just want to give a quick appreciation, shout out to Johnny Wilson. You know, he came in here from Arizona State at a time when Florida State, you know, it was a tough sell at that point. Right. And so he comes in and he, you know, I think he had something over like well over 1,000 yards and over his 2 years here, really made a big impact, you know, so appreciate having him. His time in Garnet and Gold, but he is not going to be available in the Orange Bowl. I'm sure there's going to be some other guys that aren't going to play. But so far, that's all I've seen. And like you said, it really just depends, but that's not really going to be a extremely fair way to judge this because honestly, Georgia's going to have some guys sitting out too. We'll probably hear a lot more in the next week. We know the coaches normally give their teams the week off after the conference championship, especially when you have a month before bowl season. Right. But with that out of the way, Michael, one of the things I did want to mention was the fact that this offseason is going to be big for Florida State. Now, I understand that everybody in the first 24, 48, 72 hours, really the first week, because I tell you what, Michael, it's been, 5 days and I'm still pissed off. Like
I'm still upset.
I'm still pissed off. Like it was, pardon my French, it was a kick in the nuts when it happened. And like with that being said, man, like you had that. Then you had the Patrick Payton situation afterwards where he entered the portal because he was looking for too much NIL money. His name has since come out of the portal. Yep. You know, there was smoke that Adam Fuller was leaving. And really, it just felt like, oh, my God, this is going to be.
It's a lot of damage control.
Yeah. Right. We're in damage control mode. And then, Michael, at the same time, now that everybody took a breath, calmed down, and realized that the world doesn't fall apart in 24 to 48 hours.
That's right.
You see the staff out recruiting. And I think this is really going to come to galvanize this fan base because a couple of things, you know, that's really important here. Like we said, we haven't seen anybody bailing yet.
That's right.
Adam Fuller, the other piece of news we're going to talk about, has signed to a 3-year deal with Florida State to keep him in Tallahassee.
That's right.
And then you also have the Battles Inn come out and say that they have had their most productive week, the most amount of people joined ever in history. They had over 900 people in like the first 48 hours.
They
just announced a huge announcement today that an anonymous donor is going to match up to $500,000.
Let's go.
In donations. So like if you want to help build the Death Star,
that's right.
Donate to the Battles Inn, donate to Seminole Boosters, and let's get this thing going because I really do feel like, man, this staff has shown you the ability. They got a top three class. They put together a 19-game win streak, and they've dominated the portal. They know what they're doing. Just sit back and let them work. do what you can do, control the controllables. Don't freak out over every player that makes a move or a post on Twitter. Right. And just go for that. So I think it is an exciting future. And on that note, I will say, guys, like when you talk about even the media outlets, the way ESPN smeared this program, you know, now we had a lot of people take up for us, you know, outside of rival fan bases that thought they could troll, even though they can't sniff a championship, and a couple of, you know, and a couple of flip floppers at ESPN.
That's right.
There have been a lot of people that have come out and taken Florida State's back, which is funny how you went from the villain to the hero, in a matter of about 3 weeks.
That's right.
But I just did want to touch on real quick, Michael, before we get into some other things that, you know, I think when you talk about supporting the family, keeping it kind of in the family with Florida State, galvanizing this fan base, I think it's important to support the program, support the coaching staff, and at the same time, some of the media outlets that take care of Florida State in the way they should be represented, that don't lie or twist their facts, or, you know, like Dan Orlovsky says that Florida State wasn't undefeated without Jordan Travis, which is basically, that's a straight up lie. So, you know, we appreciate you guys, all the growth that we've had in the last week, everybody kind of flocking to the, you know, keeping it in the family here. So I do appreciate all the new subscribers and all the new followers on social media. And thank you for that. So, Michael, let's first talk a little bit here about the portal and some of the moves, and then we'll get into the offense versus defense and all the stuff that we think Florida State could compete in the playoffs. So Florida State has had some names enter the portal. Now, so far, you don't really have anyone that has really taken you down a notch. Mostly depth guys, Thomas Schrader, an offensive lineman who's battled some injuries, never really found playing time. Bless Harris, a guy who came in and performed well from you, but he was a transfer from Lamar. I think you're really just getting to the point where you're upping your talent floor now. Right. And, you know, he played a lot in a reserve role because Robert Scott was injured. Tafasi, a young guy we thought would be great. You know, sometimes you just got to move on. He didn't really have an impact. And then you had a couple of young offensive linemen in there. Of course, the most anticipated one that we all thought was going to happen, A.J. Duffy, did enter the portal. C.J. Campbell, that's one I'm going to hate to see go. That kid had a lot of talent, but he was still a walk-on. He's got to go find, you know, he's earned the right to go look for a scholarship somewhere because somebody's going to get a good one. You know, and then other than that, Marquise and Douglas is about the only other name really to touch on. Obviously, you know, you hate to see Biscuit go, but you only get so many opportunities. So really nobody that hurts you yet, Michael. And I will say the thing about this staff is when you talk about guys that have went out and guys that they're bringing in, I call it before their exchange rate, like you would with money.
That's right.
And this staff has had a really good exchange rate. I mean, you send out all those guys to Colorado. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, we're going to do it. You know, Amarion Cooper and Derek Clinton and all this stuff. I don't even know what they're doing right now. They could be, you know, I don't know what they're doing, but we're 13-0. So they're fine without them. So you just got to sit back, trust the staff and trust the process.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at those names that go in the portal and none of them really, you know, outside of Pat Payton, none of those really were like, oh, yeah, okay. I mean, even Biscuit, like Marquise and Douglas, like you love Biscuit, right? You love that he stuck around, that, you know, every game, it's like that one or two plays. You're like, oh, there's Biscuit. Look at him doing weird things and scoring touchdowns, right?
Right.
So you're sad to see him go because he's been like a culture guy for sure. What I think is interesting, obviously the two names that are super interesting is obviously Patrick Payton. And as you kind of talked about earlier, you know, here's a kid who was a high-end player. I mean, made a great impact on the defensive line this season. You know, started last season, was the, I think, ACC Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year. And then had a great impact this year. So he's looking at himself and he's thinking, man, I should get more money. And so he goes and tries to negotiate and, you know, whatever he was asking for, I've heard different numbers somewhere up in the millions. And the battle's ends like, yeah, bud. Not going to happen. We love you, but you can go find that somewhere else. And he thought he could. And so he tweeted out that he's transferring. And I bet that whoever he talked to or his, you know, agents or family, whoever's doing the talking for him, realized that these collectives talk. They're not dumb.
Yep.
And so they set the market. And he wasn't going to get much better than what Florida State was offering. So surprise, surprise, he deleted that Twitter. And as of today, as of 11 o'clock, no name in the portal. So I think that's interesting. Here's the other interesting one, Jesse, is Bless Harris. Okay. Now I've heard scuttlebutt on Twitter and around the Florida State University or Florida State like fandom sphere that, you know, he's not leaving because of money. Mm-mm. He's leaving because of playing time. Now, that's interesting, right? Because he was penciled in as a starter. And when he was healthy, he was getting the starts. But if he's leaving because of playing time, that likely means that there was a conversation had with the coaches, and they're like, hey, just going to let you know, not going to guarantee you a starting role next season, right?
Right.
That is interesting, in my opinion.
Well, I think the thing is they're going to have that conversation with everybody, and yep. and people have to realize, like, there's going to be some guys where they are going to chase better opportunities. There's yep. going to be times where guys are going to chase more money.
Yeah.
And this is just like a job market, man. You have yep. sometimes you have to go get your feelings hurt.
Yep.
So right. you can come back to reality and realize yep. that, like you said, these collectives talk.
Yep.
And the battle's in is, you know, they may not have the most funding in the country, but they have been one of the most effective collectives that's out right. there at doing what they do. And so you have to trust they know what they're doing as well. They know how to manage, as weird as it sounds to say, the salaries or whatever, right. you know, of the roster. They know what to do, and they're not going to spread all that money to one, you know, give it to one person when they can spread right. it around and make the most impact. So they know what they're doing. Yeah. And then they're going to have conversations with guys. That's just like, listen, we only have so many spots. And we're planning on bringing in this, that, or the other. We're going to look at this, that, or the other in the portal. I think you need to go yeah. chase another opportunity. Yep. And some yeah. guys they may allow to stay. Some guys they may, you know, tell them they got to move it on down the road. And
yep.
and that's no knock at Bliss Harris, because I think he did good for you.
Yeah.
But
exactly. yeah,
you know, you figure with all of Robert Scott's injuries,
yep.
if he doesn't transfer out, if he's healthy next year, that gives you another starter right there.
Right.
Honestly, the year Byers had, I don't think he's, you know, I don't think he can come back, but if he can, I don't see him going to the NFL, but he may be just out of eligibility. But you also have Lucas Simmons coming in,
yep. Yep.
and you have Julian Armella, two guys at the tackle position that I'm really excited about. You have remember, it was what, 2021, they signed a massive offensive yep. line class. Yep. Now, two of those guys, Daughtry Richardson and Quayshon Sapp, they have both hit the portal since, but you yep. still have a lot of guys
yeah.
that they really like. So you have the young guys, and then I think they're going to go out and probably look for some veteran day yeah. one starters.
Yeah.
Because I know something that you were going to talk about, and I'll let you, and I'll kick it to you on this, but I think that there comes, you know, the thing I really like about the portal, and this is where I think Norvell and them have been really effective at this, is they know they have young talent.
Yeah.
And then you have a school like Miami that will try and negatively recruit you because you're not giving your freshmen a lot of playing time. But what Florida State's doing is they're managing it like an NFL yeah, roster, right. man. You go out, you get your rookies, and then you get the veteran guys at the places that you need to plug those holes while they right. develop. You right. don't need to throw people to the fire and ruin no. them.
Correct.
And that's a position that with the offensive line that you can ruin a guy too early if he goes yep. into place.
Absolutely.
So you want to give those guys. Now some of those guys will have 1 and 2 years to get college ready. But I think when you talk about some of the offensive line struggles that they had this year, you're going to want to go get if these are available. And honestly, offensive line is probably one of the hardest positions to get out of the portal.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants them and there's just not right. a lot of them.
Right.
You're going to want to try and go after some day one starters because you need to be able to run the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. Like offensive linemen are, it's been proven that them and the quarterbacks have, that they for the most part have not been, they've been mostly portal buses, meaning you get these guys out of the portal and there's a reason why they're in the portal. There's a reason why they transfer. Offensive linemen are developed. They're not mostly portaled, meaning it's going to be harder for you to find a day one starter right. That's going to be dominant as an offensive lineman in the portal because, man, the best ones are developed over the course of time, right? And so what you end up looking at is, okay, we're bringing in these younger guys, but until they develop, like I love what you said there, it's just like the NFL. Like if you put a rookie, unless it's a can't miss, like day one starter, right. you would have right. drafted that rookie in top five picks. Right. And so, but if you put them in too early, you ruin them and then they're done. They're just nothing. How many players have we seen have that happen? They started the freshman year. They get in, they get beat up, they get run over, and they're just not the same. I mean, look at Tate Rodemaker. I mean, freshman right. year, pure freshman, gets into Jacksonville State and has a terrible showing, gets replaced by Jordan Travis. And what? We don't see him again until the Louisville game last year.
Right. And offensive line, I'll say that's really that is the poster child for needing to develop just from a yeah. physicality standpoint. Yes,
absolutely. You know,
a lot of times they're not coached great at the high school level. So you got right. technique you got to work on. And then yep. honestly, most of them could either probably lose 20 pounds when they come in or gain 20 pounds of yep. muscle. So yep. like you said, these are guys that, unless they're just that elite, can't miss type of guy,
right.
they're probably not going to play till 2 or 3 years into the program.
Right. And so when you're looking at Florida State's situation, you know, let's just be honest, okay? We all love Alex Atkin. We think he's one of the best recruiters in the country. We're grateful that he's coaching here. But, you know, we wouldn't be a true fan news outlet if we didn't call a duck a duck. We have to admit where there have been some struggles. And this season was a struggle for the offensive line. Yes, we acknowledge that they were injured this season. Yes, we acknowledge that there were eight guys that they felt really great about coming in the season and that they were planning to do a little bit of, you know, rotating. But, man, they rotated like they were changing their underwear. And you just didn't get any consistency. We could not run the ball for the first couple quarters. Every game it was a problem until the end of the game where we finally wore them out and we bust one or two runs, you know, in the game. I mean, that's a problem. So this year, I mean, let's just be honest. It hasn't been great for Alex Atkins in that offensive line. And he knows it. I'm sure he knows it. That's why I have to believe the rumors about Bless Harris are true, because he's probably said, look, man, like, you can come back and we're going to use you, but I can't guarantee you a starter because my job as a coach is to go get the best players and recruit over you. Your job, I love you said this in our pre-show the other day, is like, my job as a coach is to go recruit over you and get the best of the best. Your job is to fight for your job and keep it, right?
Right.
And so I feel like Alex Atkins recognized, like, I got to go get better players. I've got to find them if we're going to have a chance to continue what we're already doing.
Right. And that's something that we were talking about in the pre-show where I had told you that back in the preseason, the question was like, could Florida State win a national championship? And a lot of that had to do with what's called the blue chip standard. So basically, long story short, since the playoff era around 2014, no team has won the national championship without having over a 50% blue chip ratio on their roster. And so the problem with a lot of that is a lot of those guys are your depth guys, like with some of these teams, the younger guys who aren't necessarily playing. And with Florida State, it was like they didn't, up until they're signing these better classes now like they have this year, their blue chip ratio and the depth was not great. But the top end depth was pretty good. And like, I started going through and looking at how many guys were blue chip guys. And the thing that really stood out was really the offensive line. That's where I think they had like one 4-star in the, you know, maybe the top six guys or something. It's been 6 months since I've done that.
Right.
But they didn't have a lot of talent up there. And you know, I'm not here to bash anybody who's out there working their butt off on the field, because I promise you the first time I line up across from Jared Verse, I'm going to be in the hospital.
Get lit up. Yep.
Right. Like, he hits dudes with dudes. So like, I admit it's hard to block these guys, but you know, you saw some times where like Byers, who I thought they wanted to play at guard this year, had to end up playing tackle, didn't really have a great year there. No. You know, got beat on 3-man rushes a few times. I think Roddick was a little bit inconsistent, you know, and you just dealt with so many injuries up front. But I think at the end of the day, you do have to elevate that talent floor, because when you talk about teams like Georgia and Alabama, even, and you know, as much as we're pissed off to even talk about them, Ohio State, Michigan, all these teams that you're trying to compete on that level, the one thing they have is talented depth in the trenches. You know, when Georgia lost their 5-star, he might have been a 4-star left tackle in the national championship game against TCU, they brought a 5-star off the bench.
Yep.
And so, and that's what's going to, like, depending on how many opt-outs we see, this is a side note, that's what's going to be the difference in the Orange Bowl. When everybody says, well, go beat Georgia and prove you belong to be in the playoffs. The problem with the Orange Bowl is, like, Florida State is a sum of all its talented pieces. They have a lot of good guys up at the top. And even without Jordan Travis, the quarterback, you know, even the I was going to say a bad word, but even the Lion Butt Committee, even they said you've got playmakers all around you right before they decided to drop you out of the top four. But so you could stand and maybe lose one guy, but when you start losing multiple guys, the depth pieces that you have to bring in aren't the same as the one Georgia's going to bring in. That game is not going to be equal when you talk about who they're going to replace these guys with. But at the end of the day, man, I do agree with you. You got to go out and try and get the most talent that you can on your roster, because that's your job as a coach. And if it hurts somebody's feelings and they end up leaving, so be it, man. That's part of it. Like, competition, if competition scares somebody away, it is what it is. And I think that's another thing that we can kind of turn our attention to, some names that that's been floated out there at the quarterback position too, because, you know, everybody thought, we're not taking a quarterback in the portal because you're going to scare somebody off. And I think everybody also is taken aback a little bit that the first name that's being floated around with Florida State is, I'm going to make a really good attempt at this, and then I'm going to call him DJU the rest of the season. DJ Uiagalelei.
There you go. Okay.
How crazy is the portal, man? Like,
isn't that wild?
He plays you against you in Doak of just, what, a year ago or whatever. 2 years ago, and now he might be your quarterback. They are being rumored. Like, they're pointing to us, Mississippi State. There was a little bit on Louisville, but I think the Texas Tech kid went there.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, man, you just have to do what's best for your team. And when you talk about now in the portal era of college football, you almost have to think of it as you're building for the future, but each season is a one-season block. And you have to do, because you don't know who's going to stick around. You don't know who's going to be available. And there are plug-and-play pieces that are available in the portal. So if you have the ability to say, okay, you know, you mentioned this in pre-show where – I mean, we love Tate. He's got 4 years in his program, but what he did coming into Florida was a challenging situation, but that was not a good defense, and he still looked kind of lost in the moment.
Correct.
You know, he still really didn't wow you there. I just feel like, man, as much as I would love to see what Tate can do to develop, if you can go find me a day one starter, because Brock Glenn, everybody's trying to give him crap about throwing for 55 yards in the ACC championship. He was a true freshman.
True freshman.
First start, been injured most of the year with a hand injury that he sustained in the Southern Miss game. He was not ready.
No.
So if you can give him another year and find a ready-made guy, I'm not really mad at that. And, of course, now, like, if I could take my pick, I would get Cam Ward out of Washington State.
Yeah.
That's probably going to cost you a good bit. But I'm not, man, like, at first I thought, and I'll kick it back to you after this, but at first I thought, like, are we really about to go after DJU?
I know.
And then I got to thinking about it, and I'm like, okay, man, well, he really, like, he had some accuracy issues, and he had a little bit of turnover problems at Clemson, but – man, he's like 6'4", 230, I think. He's an absolute tank. When you talk about running the ball, he's a dual threat guy. He's got 4 years of experience at the Power 5 level. He had a really good year at Oregon State. When you look at just, you know, when he left Clemson, he openly criticized their offense. And Dabo actually said he wasn't wrong about it. And that, you know, that led them to firing the offensive coordinator. And then, you know, even now, look at what they're doing with Cade Klubnik. The quarterback development has just not really been there since they had those, like Trevor Lawrence and those guys. But then you look at what Florida State, what Tony Tokars and the staff did with Jordan Travis, turning him in from a guy who didn't even want to play quarterback anymore to a Heisman hopeful. So, you know, to me, man, if you can go out and get a ready-made starter, a guy that's got 4 years, last year at Oregon State, he threw for 21 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 2,600 yards. You know, and I'm not, and if you look, I'm not even sure how many he ran for, but again, you get a dual threat guy with a lot of experience who may have a little bit of a, you know, chip on his shoulder against Clemson,
right?
And, you know, your biggest division or your biggest conference rival, and then experience playing in the ACC, man. I'm not against it. Like, if you can get it, and if it hopefully it doesn't scare someone off, because really, I think the two that you're most interested in, you want Brock Glenn, you want Croman Hawk, that's your future. But I think they need another year, man. And if you can get a ready-made starter, I think I would – let's be honest, man. I think I would probably trust this offense with DJU and that big size, experience, dual-threat ability over I would handing the keys to Tate. And that's no offense to Tate, man. It's just, again, it's a one-game – or it's a one-block season. You got to try and win as much as you can next year.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, if you're Mike Norvell, you're looking at next year's schedule, right? And – it's not as hard as it was this season. You basically replace LSU with Notre Dame. You add the Golden Bears out of California, which is wild. Crazy. You add SMU, and then you're at Miami. You're at SMU. You got North Carolina coming to Doak. You got Clemson coming to Doak. You got Boston College, Cal, and Florida coming to Doak. And then you have Memphis coming to Doak, and you'll be in Dublin, Ireland for the Yellow Jackets. I mean, at worst, in my opinion, based on the roster that I think will be there next year, at worst, you're looking at a 10-win season, right?
Right.
You know, the two games that are probably toss-up, that Clemson game and potentially the Notre Dame game because it's at Notre Dame. So you're trying to find a quarterback who you know is good for 10 wins, like is going to carry you 10 wins. And so the question you have to ask yourself is DJ good for 10 wins? Is he 10 wins baseline, or is he worse than that? Or is he better than that? What is his war? Like, you know, we use the baseball terms, wins against replacements, right? So if you look at Tate and you look at DJ, like who has the better war? If you look at Tate and you look at Cam Ward and you look at DJ, of the three, who has the better war? And whoever has the better war, based on your roster management philosophy for the 2024 season, you got to go get them, or you don't get them. But I think you and I both agree, you know, earlier we were like, no, stay out of it. But once we've kind of seen the evidence of Tate, and this is not saying Tate's bad. We love Tate. But again, against Florida, yes, in the swamp, 90,000, first start, all those things. Yeah. Okay. But when everything became equal, when it was calm and collected, he didn't perform.
It was, I think, what, like 134 yards and I don't think any passing touchdowns or something like that. Right. Now, again, here's the thing, man. Tate has every right to get better.
Right.
And at the end of the day, just because you bring in a portal quarterback doesn't mean he's your starter.
Correct.
Tate could beat him out and win the job.
That's
but
right.
You do bring up a good point when you talk about the war. Is DJU, his last 2 years at Clemson, when he was actually the starter, you know, of course, he got pulled a few times for Klubnik. Yeah. They won 11 games and 10 games. So if you're looking to win 10 games, I mean, there you go. So I just really think, like, we don't know that they're going to go get DJU.
Right.
They could be in it for a couple different guys. But at the end of the day, man, you got to trust what the staff is going to be able to do, knowing that they have more knowledge about this roster and the needs of this roster than anybody else. They have watched practice. They have seen guys in games. They know how they feel about, can this, like you said, can this guy get us where we need to go? Yep. Can this guy get us where we need to go, but he needs more development?
Correct.
And do we need to go get somebody or not? And you have to trust him to be able to do that. And at the same time, I think, one, you're going to be able to get some bigger pieces out of the portal because you now have that success. You've shown that you can compete at a high level. You've also shown that you've done a hell of a job with transfers. I mean, you're going to put probably five or six, maybe seven of them in the NFL this year.
In the top four rounds.
Exactly. Like, you got a lot of all ACC selections, you know, back-to-back years with transfer guys. So you're a transfer destination. So you kind of be able to pick and choose who you want to shop for. But at the same time, Michael, like, I really trust this staff to go out and identify talent. That's been one of their biggest strong points so far, is identifying diamonds in the rough. You think about Jared Verse. They went and got him from Albany.
That's right.
When they were watching a game scouting Syracuse. And
that's
this
right.
guy's about to be a first-round NFL draft pick. You know, Johnny Wilson had, I think, 237 yards in 2 years at Arizona State. Now he's projected to be like a top 100-ish pick.
That's right.
You also, I mean, you just, Trey Benson, I think he had like six carries at Oregon, and he had almost 1,000 yards. Right. Almost 1,000 yards last year. And everybody said, what are you doing taking Trey Benson?
Right.
So I think,
what about Jerry and Jones? You know, what about those guys?
Exactly. Like, Fabian Love, like all these. Well, I think Fabian might have been here before then, but still, you talk about the guys that they've been able to identify.
Yeah.
I trust this staff to go find guys that are going to be able to fill the needs that they have to, that they know this roster needs. And I trust them to do that. And again, I don't think we should freak out.
Nope.
I think you just sit back, you let them, the battle's in, and you let all these guys work and do what they're supposed to do.
Right.
And, you know, as we get closer to the bowl game and bowl prep, and you see guys who maybe enter or don't. And the thing is, man, you may see some names go out in the spring. Like, guys don't know they're going to come in and compete for some jobs, but they're not going to transfer until they don't have the job.
Right. This is only the first of the opening portal season. Okay.
Right.
This right now. And it will close. Then we'll have a spring portal season, right? Where we'll see some more guys. They'll realize that they got beat out, so they'll transfer. And Mike and them will have a plan, because they'll look at other spring practices and say,
right,
well, that guy just got beat out, but he's really good, so let's go get him. Or this guy looks like he's about to transfer. Man, again, the moment we hit 13-0. Now, this was already happening based on what I heard and saw in all the places. This is already happening during the season. But the moment we hit 13-0, all those kids that got in that were thinking about getting the portal, you know what the first thing they did? They said, hey, Florida State, look over here.
Right.
They want to come here. And so Mike Norvell and that staff, they're going to have the basically almost the pick of the litter, right?
Yep.
They have to be very selective, because the great thing about it is, We already have a top five recruiting class, and it could be.
Right.
I mean, as we are recording this, Jeremiah Smith is on his official visit at Florida State, right?
Yep.
And in the state championship game, the dude was wearing Florida State gloves. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some pieces that are still out there that if Florida State gets, I mean, we're looking at potentially a number one recruiting class with that kind of development they're going to get from the coaching.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how you build a championship level program. You go out and you get the high school recruits. then you grab the pieces out of the portal in you know, in today's area, this isn't how it used to be, but now you grab those pieces because, again, if you can create perpetual success,
right,
if you can stay above that 10 win mark, yep, going forward, you're going to track these recruits over, yep, and over, because they're going to see, right, okay, Florida State wasn't a flash in the pan. They're that TCU type of team. They are able to come in and consistently win. And like you mentioned, Jeremiah Smith is either going to be the biggest troll, you know, like we've seen before, or he's going to be, you know, he's going to be one of the biggest flips. And so he's on an official visit this weekend. They also have some other guys, the Pitt defensive end, the Georgia, yep, Tech defensive end. There is a Duke defensive end, RJ Oben, who's going to be on a visit next weekend. That would be one I would really like to get.
Yes.
And they have offered a couple other guys. There are some other big names in the portal, even some guys from, you know, that other dump around the corner there. D-tackle Chris McClellan and running back Trevor Etienne, who, my, yep, goodness, Michael, have you seen the stuff on Twitter? Oh, my gosh. That fan base is in full-on meltdown mode.
Yeah.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, he put his name in the portal, and like former players and fans, they're going after his mom on Twitter, yeah, just saying vile, yeah, things. So like, I'm just sitting back.
Why would you ever want to play at that school?
I'm just sitting back with that evil little laugh. Like, just bring it all down. Yeah, let's just, yeah, collapse the whole thing. So it's about to be over for Sunbelt Billy and the boys. But
that's right.
Yeah, man, I really do think you got to trust the staff. But what I was going to say is, as we get farther into the season, the portal season and all that stuff, when more names emerge and we have more concrete evidence, because I don't partake in cryptic tweet season.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will say there's a lot of cryptic tweets out there about some really big names that might, yep, put your jaw on the floor coming to, yep, Florida State. I don't know who they are. I'm not gonna you know, say
speculate.
Some things.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I do think that you will see some names come out. I don't want to really, like I said, I don't want to say anything that I don't really know about. But
yeah,
as they come about, we will get you guys some more information on, absolutely, that and let you know.
Make sure you guys are – make sure you got your notifications on. Make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. If you want to make sure to stay up date with all those big jaw-dropping names, I mean, you know, Jesse does an incredible job of making sure that we're staying up to date. So make sure you keep on following us. Share all this stuff, man, because we want to get you guys the best news. I mean, this is your home for authentic Florida State football coverage.
Exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself. And we're going to be really ramping things up again during this offseason for you guys, trying to stay on top of everything. And yeah, Michael, the next thing I want to get into is, speaking of supporting and sharing, I just want to bring you a word from today's sponsor, Alumni Hall FSU. We really appreciate what they do to help us put the show on for you guys. And you know, Michael, Christmas is coming. And
yes,
if you are looking to deck the halls with garnet and gold,
oh, come
on,
you
can do it at I made that up all by myself, man. I'm telling you. So like, if you are looking to do that, you can get some FSU gear at a great price using code SPEAR to get 10% off online or in store, alumnihall.com, 1817 Thomasville Road. Go check them out. Tell them we sent you, and cross all the Seminoles you got on your list off with some great FSU gear. That's Alumni Hall FSU and code SPEAR. We appreciate them sponsoring us, and we appreciate you supporting those that support us. So, Michael, the next thing I want to get into, man, obviously it has just been the talk of the country, really, man. I mean, you got politicians, you got, yeah, talking heads, you got, you know, social media, just
everybody. You got SEC star Heisman probably going to win quarterbacks,
right,
chiming in.
You got so many people talking about this, like, and I've heard so many hundreds upon hundreds of opinions,
yeah,
over through social channels the last couple of days that we've been talking about this. Because like I said, guys, I posted some threads really kind of coming out defending FSU in this and why I feel like they should have been in. And I mean, I'm surprised my phone's not on fire from all the notifications I've got. I finally had to give up and just turn it on silent. So if I miss your notification or something like that, I do apologize. But I mean, it's literally like every 2 seconds my phone's going off. But what I want to talk about in this next section, Michael, is let's talk about why, because there's this narrative out there, man, that, you know, they did not want to see another blowout in the playoffs or whatever. And everybody's coming out and acting like Florida State was going to get the TCU treatment in the playoffs. And yeah, man, I don't think that at all. So the first,
okay, well, before you jump into this, because I want to make sure I want everybody watching and listening to this right now, because this is gold what Jesse put together. But there's a misnomer we have to correct very quickly, and then I'll turn it back to you. Is everyone talks about this TCU treatment that Florida State is going to get in. They're going to get blown out like they did, like TCU did against Georgia. But what they forget, what they very favorably and conveniently forget, was that TCU beat Michigan in the first round of the playoffs. They beat Michigan. They beat the number one defense in the first round of the playoffs. Then to go on and, yes, see the talent discrepancy against Georgia. So the argument is already a false dichotomy already. It is already a fallacy because they beat Michigan. That's the point of this. Not that they went up against Georgia and lost in the national championship game. They beat Michigan. And every single playoff over the last 9 years or 10 years that it's been in existence, there's been at least one blowout game. So to act like that this would be the first time that Florida State or that a team would get in and get blown out because of what happened to TCU is asinine. Now you go ahead.
I agree, man. It's just, and that's really the funny thing so far is that like so many people have, they really just kind of make things up. You know what I'm saying? To just really kind of to form their narrative. That's what I love so much about when people argue with me on social media. I just tell them, I'm like, look, you guys don't realize the research I put into everything I do before I do it. So if I'm going to say something, I'm coming to you with facts in hand. I've done the research. And so I do think you bring up a good point, too. And that's where I want to start is the fact that when people talk about blowout games in the playoffs and how they wanted to avoid a bad game. Well, the numbers show that 19 of the 27 CFP game or games in the CFP era, the score has been decided by three scores or more. And I define that as a blowout, essentially.
That's correct.
Three scores or more. That's a blowout. So 70% of their games have been blowouts. So the CFP, if their job, the committee, is to pick the best four games for what they think from a TV ratings and all that, and the best four teams, they suck at it. They are not
absolutely.
They are not good at this because 70. Like if I had a 70% lose rate in gambling, I'd be probably living on the streets right now.
Right.
You know what I mean? You would not take my advice at all. And so, not only that, but people act like the upsets, and that speaks to what you talk about. Florida State would not be if they lose. If they were to lose, would not have been the only team. No. There's been a lot of good teams to get blown out in the playoffs.
Correct.
You are playing against the other three best teams in the country. Let's not forget that as well. And so at the same time, when people talk about upsets, and someone actually said the other day that upsets don't happen that often at high level of football. And I was like, are you crazy?
Are you kidding
me? So out of these games, 13 times the lower seed has beat the higher ranked seed. The higher ranked seed has won 14 games. So that's 50-50 right there. In the national championship, the lower ranked seed has won 6 out of 9 national championships. Like you said, there has never been a year where a blowout didn't happen. There has never been a year where a lower seed didn't win a game. In 2014, the higher seeds lost every game.
Correct.
So you can't tell me that upsets don't happen in the playoffs all the time. You can't tell me that blowouts don't happen all the time. So you can't tell me that's why they didn't put Florida State in the playoffs.
Come on.
And so now I want to talk about knowing that. I want to talk about why I think Florida State could have held their own in the playoffs. And I have a lot of notes on our offense and things like that. And listen, I encourage you to read the one I titled something along the lines of like tinfoil. I'm not putting on my tinfoil hat here or whatever. I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, Michael. But at the same time, ESPN does have a media rights deal that was signed back in 2020 that goes into effect in 2024 for $3 billion. The SEC has that with ESPN. ESPN puts on the college football ranking show. They put on both playoff games in the national championship. And, you know, man, like if we're going with our tinfoil hats here, I'm going to go ahead and put mine on, tighten it down, strap it up. Boo Corrigan's, I think, brother or cousin or like brother-in-law.
Vice president of programming.
At ESPN. I mean, like, it just, you know, if you want to go there and really go down a rabbit hole, man, it does seem really, really strange. But let's talk about, first off, the main reason. We'll talk about offense in a second because I know that's really the knock on Florida State. But let's talk about the defense, which is what I think would have kept Florida State in this, in any playoff game that they played against. And the first thing I want to point out is when people talk about Florida State would have got the TCU treatment, here's why they wouldn't. So first off, they beat Michigan. Congratulations. They did a great job. They lost. They gave up 59, 58 points or something like that to Georgia. They had the 90th ranked scoring defense.
Correct.
90th. Florida State has the 6th. So you can't tell me that's not even comparable. And so the thing, when I look back to Florida State's defense throughout the season, now, first off, Jordan Travis didn't play defense. So when we talk about the defense, everybody who played in the LSU game was available in the Louisville game, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And so Florida State's defense has not given up 30 points to anybody the entire season. And here's my thing, man. If you want to talk, like, people will talk about, oh, that's week one.
Yeah.
If Texas's win over Bama in week two got them into the playoffs, then what happened in week one is just as valid. Correct. So against LSU, mind you, the number one offense in the country, Florida State's starting defense, because, you know, they pulled them out there at the end. So I went back and I looked at how they did against Alabama, because first off, it's a common opponent, and then it's against a current playoff team. So in the first 59 minutes of the game, before they pulled Jaden, or before they pulled our defense,
yep,
the LSU offense, Florida State gave up 17 points and 384 yards in a neutral site game. In the first 47 minutes of game time, because keep in mind, right, Jaden Daniels got, right, knocked out of the Alabama, right, game, and then they couldn't
do as anything they were afterwards. Winning.
Right, and they couldn't do anything afterwards. So in the first 47 minutes, so 12 less minutes, almost a quarter, Bama gave up 28 points and 430 yards at home.
Say that again.
28 points, 430 yards in front of your home fans. Mm. So now, of course, Jaden Daniels goes out. They end up winning the game. But the point is, defense keeps you in games like this. And, correct, when you look at what Michigan's defense did in the last three games, they only topped 300 yards one time in the last four games of the season. Now, they played some good defenses toward the end, but you played good defenses too. Like, they only put up 24 against Penn State. Florida State's defense, when you look at statistics, is just as good as Penn State. So,
correct,
that is just a head-to-head comparison there that shows you what they could do compared to Alabama's defense against a really good offense. And I'll let you make a point, and then we'll go into some more numbers that I got.
Yeah, like, so here's the thing, though. So Florida State has one of the top pass defenses in the country, correct?
Yep.
Correct, okay? Florida State has not allowed any team this entire season to score 30 or more points, correct?
Right.
Correct. Michigan has the 73rd ranked passing offense in the country. They average 218 yards a game. They only have 21 passing touchdowns. They average 12.2 yards per completion, but they only throw it about 9.3 yards per every throw. Five interceptions, okay? Now, what does that tell you? Well, it tells me, Jesse, that had Florida State been put at four and got the opportunity to go out to the Rose Bowl to play Florida State, and we all know that Michigan doesn't have a dynamic quarterback nor a dynamic wide receiver room, it would have told me that Florida State would have been in the game. I don't know if they would have won it. They would have, right, been in the game.
Yeah, because, I mean, you still have to score points to win, but people act like Florida State couldn't hold these teams down.
Correct.
And, you know, again, man, when you look back at, like, the Penn State game, they put up 24 points against a defense that's kind of similar to what you were able to do. And, you know, even then, man, the Iowa game, that's another, right, good one, because when you look at advanced metrics, these are DF plus metrics, which are opponent and pace of play adjusted. Iowa's defense is third in the country. Florida State's is fifth. Very comparable.
Right.
So they put up 26 points. That's, you know, whatever. Points matter. That's more important than yards. But Florida State's offense that got so heavily criticized in the ACC championship game. Now, I understand Michigan was going against a better defense, but Louisville's defense outside of their secondary is not trash.
Not a bad defense.
And I want to make one more point on that in a second, but they put up less yards than Florida State's offense with a true freshman quarterback. And this is the point that I was going to make. Not only was it a true freshman quarterback, this is what I think everybody's ignoring about the offense. We're going to talk about the offense in a second, but this is what I think everybody's ignoring about the offense. When you have a true freshman quarterback like Brock Glennon, who's never played, you know, I'd said multiple times through the first probably quarter and a half, I was like, man, you got to live and die with this freshman. Yeah, throw the freaking ball and open up this defense. Louisville knew they could load the box to stop you. Correct. Michigan didn't have that same ailment, and they still didn't put up any yards. So, correct, again, man, like, that's why I think their defense could have held them in any game. And then, you know, when you talk about Florida State later in the season, because everybody wants to talk about that's week one,
right,
their most recent performance was maybe their most impressive outside of the LSU game. So the defense against Louisville, who everybody apparently Louisville now sucks, which, you know, they're 10-2 or 10-3 or whatever, and we're in the top 15 at the time.
Yeah.
Apparently they're not any good. Just like every other team.
Yeah.
Right. Like LSU was number 5 in the country. Florida State beats them and they suck. Okay. We know how it works. Yeah. So that's why I listen to numbers and not opinions. But they held the that Cardinal offense, which again, they're not some dynamic elite offense, but they're not terrible. They're top 30 by all metrics.
Correct.
They held them to 188 yards and only two field goals, no touchdowns, and that offense was averaging 33 points a game coming into that one.
Correct.
Louisville only faced one other top 10 scoring defense in the country last season, and that was Notre Dame, who has the 8th ranked scoring defense. Now, whether you think Notre Dame's defense is good or not, it's what the numbers tell us. They're number 8 Correct. In the country. They put up 330 yards and 33 points. So in case you weren't keeping track, that's 330 to 188, 33 to 6. That's a huge difference. That's, again, man, that speaks to what Florida State's defense has been able to do. Correct. And a stat that David Hale of ESPN, who's been really going to bat for Florida State, he put out a stat that Florida State held their last two opponents to negative yards in the fourth quarter. No other team in the last 20 years has held back-to-back teams to negative yards in the fourth quarter. Florida State's defense, and I pulled these when I was looking at Fuller coming back, they are top 10 in scoring defense, passing defense, yards per play, yards per drive, sacks, tackles for loss, and that's just to name a few. Like we said, they are top 5 in opponent-adjusted ranking. So by all intents and purposes, Michael, that tells you this is a good defense, right? We feel absolutely. Pretty confident that this is a good defense. They face some tough competition. Okay, so moving forward, all right, man, you're going into the playoffs. You got some really good teams over here. Like, you can't shut down these really good teams. All right, well, bear with me. So let's keep in our mind here that Florida State has held every team to under 30 points this entire season.
Correct.
There's been 27 CFP games involving 54 teams. 29 of those teams were held under 30 points or less, three extras at 31. So you're looking, a little bit more there at 31 points. 14 of those were top 10 offenses. Oof. 22 of those were top 20 offenses. And the reason I bring up top 10 and top 20, there is not a single top 10 offense in the playoffs this year, but they're all in the top 20. They're just none are inside the top 10.
Yep.
But then, Michael, everybody's going to go, hey, but FSU couldn't score 30 points against these teams. Okay, well, I'll do you one better. 17 teams in the playoff era have been held to 20 points or less. Seven were top 10 offenses. 11 were top 20 offenses. Okay, Florida State, you think they can score 20 points? Well, what if they could score 10, Michael? 9 teams were held to 10 points or less. 3 were top 10 offenses, and 5 were top 20. So, man, out of 27 playoff games, 6 of them have been won by scoring 30 points or less. 11 could have been won by 20 points given the opponent's score. And in the 2018 title game between Bama and Georgia, neither team scored 30 points, and they went to overtime.
Correct.
So, man, again, when you look at what these teams going into the playoffs are, none of them, like we said, none of them have a top 10 offense. And I'll kick it back to you after this stat. So I looked at what the teams that are in the playoffs right now, what have they done against the best defenses that they faced if they had to go in and play Florida State? Because everyone talks about Florida State versus them. No one talks about them versus Florida State.
Right.
So Michigan, who has the 14th ranked offense, they played 3 top 10 defenses. Ohio State, Penn State, and Iowa. They averaged 26.6 points per game.
Okay.
Feels like Florida State could probably hold them under 30.
Yep.
Washington, 11th ranked offense, has not played a top 10 defense this entire season. The closest one they played is Oregon at 11th. They did score 35, but Michael, I will also add this. Oregon really hasn't played a whole lot of good offenses, and the one good offense, Washington, who they did play, they gave up over 30 points both times.
They lit them both times,
Exactly. Now, Texas, who has a 16th-ranked offense, again, not played a top 10 offense. They've only played one in the top 25, who was Bama at 17th, and they scored 34 points. So then Alabama, who has a 19th-ranked scoring offense, scored 27 versus Georgia, who is top 10, and 24 versus Texas at 13th. So nobody really on that list. Only two of the teams have faced a top 10 offense. Two have not even faced it, but none of them have scored over 30 points. So this bull crap narrative, I'm trying to keep a G here, guys.
I get
fired up when I talk about this. This bull crap narrative that some team's going to come in and house Florida and put up a 40 or Florida State and put a 40 burger on them and all this stuff. Like, the numbers tell a different story. Really good offenses have been held to under 30 points in the offense. Florida State has held really good offenses to under 30 points. Every offense to under 30 points.
Right.
And the offenses you would have faced haven't scored over 30 points on a top 10 defense. So don't tell me that Florida State's defense can't keep them in any of these games, man. None of these offenses really scare you besides Washington, and they have a piss poor defense, so your offense should be able to score on them.
And the fact and the factor that every, you know, talking that four-letter word company, I refuse to. I literally have not opened my ESPN.
I think it's five. I think they changed it to five letters.
They probably did.
SECPN or whatever.
Yeah. I have not opened that ESPN app. I refuse to get on their website. I am boycotting them, at least for this, you know, foreseeable future. What they forget to talk about is the fact that Mike Norvell and Adam Fuller would have had a whole month, 31 days to plan and prepare to get this team ready to play in this game. You're telling me that one of the greatest offensive genius in the game today, and surprisingly, one of the best defensive coordinators in the game, right? Wow. Because 4 years ago, we would have not said that.
That thing where it's like they're looking at each other and they're toasting their drinks? Like, who would have thought we would have ever been here? But here we are. And I'll kick it back to you, but I will add in, yes, you have a month, and you get Darryl Jackson back. 6'5", 330-pound, four-star defensive tackle on one of the best defensive lines in the country.
Correct.
So, back to you.
Correct. Right. And so then if Mike Norvell and Adam Fuller and that staff has a whole month to game plan, like let's say you put them at four, and they have a whole month to game plan for Michigan. You don't think they're going to come up with ways to score points and to stop that Michigan offense, which, by the way, again, is not the greatest offense. They're not, you know, they're not going up and down the field. They're playing in the Big Ten, where you don't have to really have great offense anyways, right? Whereas Florida State plays in the ACC, where actually there is a lot of good offenses there in the ACC. And so you don't think Florida State would have had a fighter's chance, a puncher's chance to go in to beat Michigan? How about this? Let's say if the committee had done what they were supposed to do and put Florida State at third and they play Washington, you're telling me that that defense can't shut that offense down? You saw what they did against Arizona State.
Who has the 109th ranked defense, by the way, Arizona State.
And how about this? Well, I don't even know what Washington's defense ranked. It's probably ranked a million because it's the worst defense I've ever seen of the top four teams.
I think it's 50th.
50th. Okay, well, I believe Florida State could have put in its water boy, and they probably would score against Washington. So you can't tell me, committee, you can't tell any of us Florida State fans that Florida State, with 30 days to prepare to play in that game, would have had a TCU-like treatment. And again, it's a false argument because TCU in the first round with, as my buddy here, Jesse, just reminded us, with the 90th ranked defense, walked in and beat Michigan. Now, yes, talent disparity showed them they couldn't compete with Georgia. But you know what they could do? They could beat Michigan. And so who's to say that Florida State couldn't have won the first round? Would they have won the second round? Who knows? But you didn't give them a chance. You just assumed, based off of what you saw in the ACC championship and with Florida, okay, let's just assume that is, because I don't think that was the reason, but it's the reason they use, that Florida State is a different team without Jordan Travis. You forget and I know we're going to talk about the offense in just a second.
Yeah,
and
I was just going to say, we can go ahead and pretty much transition into the offense too, if you want. If you're making points, we can go ahead and talk about the offense.
Well, because here's the thing. You're talking about finding out that your backup quarterback, Tate Rodemaker, comes off that game at Florida, Sunday night practice. You realize, okay, something's not right here. Now he's going to go into protocol. He's kind of practicing, kind of not. So is Brock Glenn really getting all the starters rep? No, he's getting majority of them, but not all of them. Right. And this is a kid who literally at Northern Alabama was the first time he could actually get back on the field. That week was the first time he could actually get back on the practice field to practice and get ready, because he's been out injured most of the season after that Southern Miss game where he injured his hand. Okay. And so then you're talking about putting a true freshman quarterback who's never start, who only had 12 passes at the time, into a game, a game of this significance.
Right.
To win a conference championship. Now, yes, he only had 55 yards of passing. But as you said earlier, Jesse, this was the game plan. They said, we're not going to let Brock lose us this game. Yep. So we're going to try to throw the ball where we feel like we can. And let's remember, there were two passes that he threw that were should have been picks, right?
Right.
Let's throw the ball where we can. But other than that, Brock, We need you to, what Mike Norvell says is, own the football. Don't turn it over. We believe we'll score enough points because this defense, and I don't know if they knew they were going to have that kind of performance, but they knew that defense was going to rise up and help keep them in the game, which they did. And so then you're going to say, well, that's the reason. Look at them. They look terrible. That's not the reason. I'll let you go and I'll come back with my.
Yeah, I agree, man. I do think a lot of that too is just Louisville knew what you were trying to do. You knew what you couldn't do.
Yep.
And everybody keeps talking about that game. But again, man, first off, you gained more yards than Michigan did. You had to go to the Wildcat and stuff. But Brock Glenn, everyone keeps like glancing over this. Unless you're a Florida State fan, he would not have started in the playoff games unless you had another injury situation. And at that point, you don't really expect to be able to win with your third string quarterback. Right. But we all knew, and the committee knew, because you knew he was a game time decision. You knew that it was more than likely. Florida State doesn't share injury news. We knew it was more than likely in the concussion protocol. You knew he was going to be back. They knew that.
Right.
And I know Florida's defense wasn't good, but you still scored 24 points. And like we said, if you can hold these teams under 30 points, you're in the game with a 24-point total. And the other thing that I will mention too, man, is like when you talk about scoring 16 points against Louisville with your third-string quarterback who only threw for 55 yards, and I'm going to make a couple points off. I'm going to pivot off this in a few different directions. But the first thing I want to say is Tate, I think, had like 370-something snaps, and Brock had 21 coming into this game.
Yep.
Do you not think that Tate Rodemaker would have been good for about at least another score or so in that game? Say just one touchdown. Say Florida State gets to around 23, 24 points or something like that. So now you've shown that you can score over 20 points consistently with Tate in at quarterback. And we don't know what Tate would have done, but again, you feel like he probably would have been able to throw the ball at least to loosen up the defense a little bit more. You would have been able to open your playbook up a little bit more as well.
Right.
And everyone says Louisville's defense sucks. It's the 21st ranked defense. Now, I know they didn't play a lot of tough teams. I get that. But at the same time, like, that's not a terrible defense. And you still probably feel, like I said, with Tate, you probably could have put up around 20-something points. You feel a little better about having him than Brock in. But the other thing I want to say, man, is everybody really points to this game, this Louisville game, as, oh, this is the one that got Florida State booted out because their offense wasn't very good. And what the frustrating part to me about this conversation is, Michael, is the committee – projected what could have happened for Florida State.
Yeah.
But they didn't project what could have happened for the other teams.
Correct. Correct.
Because you can't project injuries, but you also can't rule out injuries. So you punished Florida State when other teams could have had injuries. And let me tell you something, man. Ask Ohio State about injuries in the playoffs. Ask Alabama about injuries in the playoffs. Ask Georgia about injuries in the playoffs.
Ask TCU.
Well, I'm saying ask Georgia, because if Georgia doesn't have two key injuries against Alabama star wide receiver went out, John Metchie went out in the SEC championship game, and then Marvin Harrison Jr. got knocked out in the semifinal game.
That's right.
You probably don't have two national championships.
That's right.
And so you can't tell me that other teams can't lose players in the playoffs, because we've seen that happen throughout history. Now, Michael, I don't know if you want to think back to a time when a certain playoff team named Alabama had to put their backup in a game.
Ooh.
And here's the thing. It wasn't because you put your backup in there because Milroe was hurt. It's because he wasn't playing well. You benched him. And so you went up against South Florida, who, by the way, was a one-win AAC team last year. They went 6-6 this year. They have the 123rd ranked scoring defense. Mm. Alabama put up 17 points, threw for 107 yards. And they also, in that game, they were tied at 3, like late in the third quarter. And their backup has since entered the portal as a lacrosse player.
Oh my gosh.
And he wasn't a true freshman. Like, he was a transfer from Notre Dame. So he had played Tyler Buckner kid. So again, man, like, you look at how bad they did with a backup in the game. And then you don't punish them for it, or at least have enough forward thinking to put together that if they lose somebody, they're in trouble. And Florida State lost somebody, but they were going to get their backup back. And so, again, man, like, we also – I have another comparison, and then I'll throw it back to you on this. So what do we think, like, with Tate in the game? So Florida State, they scored 24 points on the 79th-ranked scoring defense at Florida. They took a knee within field goal range at the end of the game. So, again, on Tate's second start in front of 90,000 people, they probably could have stretched that to 27 points. And from now on, Mike, no more knees.
Hey,
we're pulling Miami's here. We're scoring. Just hold on to the ball. But then you look at Texas. They beat a 5-7 TCU team in mid-November, so this isn't stretching way back like the USF game. But they did it in front of 50,000 people. They beat 5-7 TCU at full strength by 3 points. TCU has the 80th ranked scoring defense. Now, remember, I just said Florida had the 79th. So you are talking about almost two identical defenses here.
Right.
You scored 24 and took a knee in field goal range. And they scored 29 points in that game at full strength. Then they went and played a 7-5 Iowa State and scored 24 offensive points. Two came on a PAT block return. And they have the 34th ranked defense. So that's my case is they had two not great performances. And if you look at what we think Florida State could have done versus Louisville scoring, and I'm not going to say they're going to come out and score 35 points, but if they could have at least scored in the mid-20s, you're lockstep with Texas. And again, man, the really the only offense in there that has performed better than you on a consistent that you would feel that would perform better than you would be Washington, because they really do have a high ranked offense. But again, man, like you mentioned, they scored 15 points against the 109th ranked defense, Arizona State, with a Heisman hopeful at quarterback. So at the end of the day, Michael, what it really comes down to for me is the defense could have kept them. They could have kept them there in any game. And then the offense, if they could have put together at least, say, a 20-point performance or something like that.
They have a chance to win.
They have a chance to win. And so I don't see how you can allow a team like Washington to get in with a bad defense, and that's perfectly fine. But you don't allow Florida State to get in with an offense that, frankly, we don't know what it is.
Correct.
We didn't know what it was. But we knew Tate was going to be back with a month to prepare, and you would have time to get those guys healthy because the Florida State offensive line was playing banged up.
Correct.
So, you know, that's my case, man. I think the defense keeps you in it. I think the offense could have given you enough of a chance. And, you know, it's not – I don't think Alabama. I don't believe Texas. I don't believe Washington. And I'm not sure about Michigan. I don't think any of them shut anybody out this year.
Nope.
Anybody. So I don't see Florida State being shut out. And you know, and man, and I know we're going to wrap up here in a second, but and I'll kick it to you on this. This was something here that I said in another tweet. And to me, man, like I said, I've heard hundreds of opinions. I've heard all these arguments. I've defended Florida State, you know, left, right, and up the middle and all these things. This is what it boils down to for me, Michael. If you answer could Florida State have won a national championship with anything other than I don't know. You are part of the problem because you cannot project results on a game that is not projectable. Look at Vegas. They pay millions of dollars every year.
Billions.
They pay billions to know what they're doing with these point spreads. And that's something that everybody wants to bring up. Point spread. Florida State would have been an underdog against all four teams, you know, in the playoffs. Well, no shit, they're the fourth seed. What do you think is going to happen? Right. Sorry for the cuss word, but, you know, and then Oregon was a 9.5-point favorite over Washington.
And they lost. Got it wrong.
Louisville was a 1-point favorite over Florida State.
Got it wrong.
Georgia was a 5-point favorite over Bama.
Got it wrong.
I don't want to hear the point spread argument. Yep. So
that's right.
Again, man, if you answer they couldn't have won a championship, you don't know that until the results are played out on the field. And the fact of the matter is, when you look at the evidence at hand, the numbers tell you Florida State could have stayed in any game with their defense. Yep. Florida State has 13 reasons that tell you why they could win any game against any team you put in front of them, and zero reasons why that would say that they would lose. Yep. The teams that jumped you couldn't say the same.
Correct. Yep.
And so, man, people are going to argue up to the hill, you know, with these things, and they're going to say you had the 55th strength of schedule. But the other thing I will say, and I'll pass it back to you on this one, Michael, was Oregon, I feel like everybody, and you can tell me if I'm wrong on this, because a lot of people still think, you know, Florida State may have got left out or whatever, but if Oregon beat Washington, we all felt like they were going to get in, right?
Yep.
We figured that was probably a play-in game.
Yep.
Oregon's strength of schedule is 52nd, and their strength of record is 10th. Florida State's is 55th, and their strength of record is 3rd. So if everybody was okay with Oregon getting in with similar to worse numbers, how come it's different for Florida State? And that is the problem. The problem is, man, you have to let the games play out on the field. You cannot assume what Florida State could or could not have done, and the committee did not take that same approach. They projected what they thought Florida State could do, and their history, the numbers show, they suck at picking teams based on what they think they can do. So I'll throw it back to you on that.
Yeah.
And sorry, guys, I get a little fired up on that one.
No, I love it. And you're absolutely right, and I love that you came at it from a very logical and fact-filled perspective, and that perspective is right. I'm going to come at it from the tinfoil hat, the evil man behind the whole show here.
We got to have balance. So
you got to have balance. Exactly.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. Here it is. And this is my one point I'm going to make. At the end of the day, Florida State was never going to make the playoffs. Why?
Yep.
Because the chaos situation that ESPN had been most afraid of ended up happening. What do I mean by that? Alabama beat Georgia. When Alabama beat Georgia, it meant that Georgia was no longer an undefeated Power Five champion, right? So now they fall behind the criteria of being in the playoff because they're not a conference champion. Correct. Okay. So what that meant then is that if you looked at the ranking order, it would have moved Michigan number one, Washington number two, technically Florida State number three, and Texas or Oregon, depending on who won from Washington, number four. That meant the SEC was not going to make the playoff game. And as Jesse so elegantly said earlier, ESPN has just signed a $3 billion deal with the SEC. Okay. The ESPN also has exclusive rights to the college football playoffs broadcasting partner. They're the only ones that can broadcast them, right? And you saw on championship Saturday, on game day, for a whole hour, who? Greg Slanky, all of that. Right.
Stanky.
Right. He's politicking for the SEC to be in the playoffs. He makes a comment about one is not the same. It's the old Sesame Street quote. Right.
Right.
He's there. Why are they doing that? Because he's scared. They know. Oh, no. If Alabama beats Georgia, we could not have a SEC team in the college football playoff. And so 3 weeks ago, 3 weeks before that moment, ESPN and SEC, they start to realize this is a possibility. So you watch that game day, go to 3 weeks before championship Saturday, and they are literally talking about how if this chaos scenario happens, who should be in? And every single person on that stage right there says, well, Florida State's got to be out. Kirk Herbstreit, I love Jesus, but man, if I saw him, I would give him a hug really hard. I mean, they're all talking about this chaos situation and how Florida State doesn't deserve to be in. Florida State doesn't deserve to be in. This is before Jordan Travis even gets hurt. So at the end of the day, I don't care who won. Georgia could have won, and I'm telling you, Florida State would not have been in this title game. They would have found a way to put Texas in that game. Because here's why. When they put Texas at three, that told you everything you needed to know. As soon as I saw Texas thing come across the screen, I was like, we're screwed. They're going to screw us.
Yep.
They're going to screw Florida State. Because they needed to get Alabama in, but they could not put Alabama in without putting Texas in with the head-to-head. And let's say that Georgia wins. They would have wanted Texas to be in anyways because they're a future what? SEC partner.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. And
the
let me go.
Was in.
I was about to say, let me go on one more tangent because I know you got to get out of here. So, yeah, man, I do agree with that. I think you make excellent points. And that's why I encourage you guys to go read that tinfoil hat thing. And, you know, it's funny, Michael. I honestly just forgot. It slipped my mind before we got on here. I was actually going to have us make tinfoil hats to wear during the show. I forgot. It slipped my mind. But I do agree, man, because, again, you're talking about Florida State did not drop below Alabama.
Nope.
After they trailed 13-0 against a 3-9 FCS team when their quarterback went out for the season.
Correct.
They didn't fall below Alabama when they played with the quarterback you would have seen in the playoffs, Tate Rodemaker, or against Florida, and the offense didn't really look that great.
Correct.
They only dropped in conference championship week after beating a top 15 team when the SEC had theoretically eliminated themselves from the playoffs by Alabama upsetting Georgia. And, you know, again, so Florida State may not have ever got in. And the one thing I will say, too, is everybody says, okay, well, they gave you two chances for your offense to look better. But did they? Because did the offense wouldn't have had the same quarterback.
Correct.
So you really gave us one chance to see what Tate Rodemaker looked like. And we already know you can't judge things on a one-game season when you talk about the South Florida game, when you talk about the TCU game and all these things. And everybody said that Florida State's a different team now.
Right.
Well, think about this, Michael. At the time that Texas beat them, Alabama in week two, the win that got Alabama or Texas into the playoffs, they had just benched Milroe and struggled against South Florida. Was Alabama not a different team back then too?
Correct.
So again, man, you can reach back for you know that win and pull it out from week two and say not think that that team's any different because honestly, Alabama probably is one of the four best teams in the country.
Yeah.
But it's the process, right? And Georgia probably is too, and that's one of the reasons why you know, and everybody can talk about you should have had a 12 team this year, whatever, whatever. It's just the fact that I think Florida State, A, should have been in,
yep.
and B, they could have held with anybody. And the thing yep. that doesn't make the sense, and this is my final point here, the thing that doesn't make any sense to me, man, was if Florida State is not good enough to get into the playoffs because they lost one player, and you knew that, that's what they say, why is Florida State sitting at fifth? Why did you not drop them as soon as Jordan Travis happened or after the Florida game? Once you saw what Tate did and he threw for like 130 yards or something like that and 24 points against Florida's defense or whatever. Now, Florida's defense at home is not terrible. But the point is you should have dropped them then. You yep, should not have waited. Right. And the reason that looks bad is the reason I think Florida State is at fifth is because the committee felt like we deserved to be fifth, right? Because yep. we're undefeated yep. and we're a conference champion. If that's the deserving case, we should be in the playoffs. But if it's not the deserving case, if it's just about who is truly picking the best teams, that's what yep. they say is their criteria. Why are we ahead of Georgia?
Right.
And if we are a better team than Georgia, how come Alabama jumped four spots?
Thank you.
Above us.
Thank you.
For beating a team by 3 points in a Thank neutral you. Site, a Georgia team that was not healthy for most of the Georgia fans that I've talked to. Bowers and yep. and McConkey were both injured in that game. They're come down to some really questionable calls on a catch and things like that.
Thank you.
They did that, and that was enough to catapult you, but you're a better team than Georgia?
And I'll say
it's
this. Just,
it's yeah. inconsistent, man. It's inconsistent at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And I'll say this, and I got to go, is in the history of the college football playoff ranking, never, ever, has a team jumped three spots, and they did it twice with Texas yeah. and Alabama. Why? To get them in the playoff over Florida State.
Right, and it wasn't like you put in one-loss team. You put in two, and you gave one of them credit because they had a head-to-head that happened 10 weeks ago.
Correct.
So, again, Florida State can be a different team, but Texas couldn't have got a win over a different Alabama team. So, yeah, man, it's just – It's been, what, 4 or 5 days. It still feels dirty. I still feel like we've been, you know, took a gut punch here. But as we get ready to wrap it up, because we are running a little bit long here, but, man, I knew this was going to be a fun and inspired episode, and I knew we would kind of get going on this one, so I wanted to give it to you guys. Yeah, man, I really feel like it's just – you still feel wrong, but at the same point, man, at this – you just got to pick yourself up,
yeah.
dust yourself off, and just have faith that they're going to move forward and that we are going to build this Death Star and we're going to come back and we're just going to be a team that they cannot deny in the future. And the way you do that is you support the staff, you support the Battles End, and you support Seminole that's Boosters. Right. And, you know, if you want to have some good coverage of the team that's building the Death Star, support Plant the Spear too. So
that's right.
Like,
that's
subscribe, right. and share. We really do appreciate you guys being with us this afternoon. We will be back with more coverage, like I said, as soon as we know something with like some portal moves, maybe some transfers that maybe we're looking at, or
yeah.
you know, we know some more stuff about what's going to go on with the Orange Bowl and stuff like that. You know, who's going to play and if they're going to play or whatever the case may be. We will be back with you guys sometime next week. So be on the lookout for that. Check us out on social media to get in on the conversation. Check out all those threads I'm putting out. It's been a really busy week. It's been really a fun time on there. We're mixing it up in the comment section. Check out plantthespear.com, our hub for everything. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for your support. And guys, as always, no matter what the committee says, no matter what the talking heads at ESPN say or the rival fan bases that can't sniff a championship, you know, Miami makes it into one ACC title in the All Canes Conference of 20 years and gets beat by 5 touchdowns. I don't want to hear your opinion.
That's right.
We, as always, will end the way we always do, guys, because right. we believe in this program, Mike Norvell and the Florida State Seminoles. So thank you guys for tuning in. Go Noles.